This episode of New Retina Radio is sponsored by Zeiss.
Hello and welcome to New Retina Radio. My name is Rishi Singh and I'm staff physician and president of Cleveland Clinic Martin Hospitals in Stuart, Florida. And I'm joined by my colleagues today. We wrapped up a discussion just now on the role of imaging and geographic atrophy therapy. We wanted to capture some of the roundtable energy for you for the Sisling audience. Before we get into our discussion, let me introduce the members of this roundtable. First, Dr. Roger Grohlberg practices in the Bay Area Retina Associates in Walnut Creek, California. Hello, Roger.
Hi, Rishi. Thanks so much for having me.
Mrinali Gupta practices in Retina Associates of Orange County in Laguna Hills, California. Hello, Mrinali.
Hi, Rishi. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to the discussion.
Thank you. And Dr. Kat Talcott is practicing Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio. Hello, Kat.
Hi there. Nice to see you, Rishi. Thanks for having me.
Great. And let's get started in our discussion. So let's start off by talking about our initial imaging for the patient with geographic atrophy. Now, there's so many technologies available today, fundus autofluorescence, OCT, OCTA. Let's start off with you, Dr. Talcott. What do you use for your patient when initially screening these patients in your practice?
Yeah, I would say the mainstay of the imaging that I get is really OCT-based. Obviously, I'm looking to make sure that there's no signs of sort of exudation in these patients, but I think it can be really helpful to look at the near-infrared image to be able to see if there's any sort of areas of atrophy there. I think it highlights really well, especially if there's any sort of extrafoveal lesions. I'll look to see if they have any sort of images in our system to sort of be able to compare. I think sometimes you can look at the RPE analysis as well to see if that can highlight some of those areas and give you sort of a quantitative amount of the atrophy there. Typically for these patients, if I'm thinking about starting them on therapy, I'll also get a fundus autofluorescence at the same time because I think that image it translates really nicely into being able to show them to patients as well.
You know, Dr. Goldberg, you mentioned how near-infrared imaging is very different from fundus autofluorescence. Can you compare and contrast them for our audience members so they understand the differences of what we're seeing there?
Sure. So fundus autofluorescence is excellent at highlighting areas of kind of lost RPE because it's really focusing on the lipofuscin, which is what autofluoresces. And so geographic atrophy hypoautofluoresces. And it can be helpful not only to show the extent of the atrophy, but also kind of looking at the perilesional changes to see if there's hyperautofluorescence, where it's kind of a bright white rim around it or parts of it have a rim. And various kind of investigators and imaging experts have spent lots of time classifying different patterns of that autofluorescence. And some patterns we know have a higher risk of progression of geographic atrophy. Near-infrared imaging is pretty tightly correlated actually with the fundus autofluorescence. It's actually showing kind of the loss of the outer retina and photoreceptors, slightly different, but we know that in geographic atrophy, these patients lose both the RPE and the overlying photoreceptors. So it ends up kind of, I think, being pretty tightly correlated. The near-infrared image, of course, is a lot more comfortable for the patients. I don't know if any of you have ever had a fundus autofluorescence taken of your own eyes, but you know your patients have gotten the fundus autofluorescence when they say, "Doc, what was that really bright light they flashed into my eyes?" It's a much less comfortable imaging technology than near-infrared imaging.
You know, Dr. Gupta, we have the ability in some of the software to look at distance from fovea. And I wonder if you can first tell us about that software and also tell us about what the value might be in our patient population with geographic atrophy.
Yeah, so I think most of us get OCT imaging on, or probably all of us, on our patients with macular degeneration. And with the Zeiss software, there's an advanced RP analysis program where in the Zeiss viewer itself, I can click on that advanced RP analysis and compare to any time point. Usually I go a year or more back, and it will map out the areas of geographic atrophy so that the patients can see them in image form in a qualitative fashion. And it will also measure both the size of the atrophy and the distance from the fovea, which is useful quantitative metrics that both we and patients can follow over time to see how the geographic atrophy is changing and also how eventually, hopefully, the new drugs that are available slow down that progression.
Yeah. Dr. Goldberg, we talked a little bit about fundus autofluorescence, and you mentioned some of the differences in near infrared imaging. What about the classification of fundus autofluorescence? Why does that matter at all in geographic atrophy?
Yeah, so we know that patients, for example, who have a hyperautofluorescent rim, particularly kind of a diffuse and trickling pattern, those are the patterns that are more likely to progress or get worse more quickly. Lesions that don't have any hyperautofluorescent rim tend to not progress or not progress very quickly. And so if you're thinking about initiating a treatment that requires an injection into the eye every month or every other month, well, we really want to target those eyes that are at high risk of getting worse over a kind of a, you know, reasonable amount of time, because those are the ones we definitely want to intervene in. And so if there's a lesion that doesn't have any hyperautofluorescent rim, for example, sometimes we see this like where a pigment epithelial detachment kind of collapses into an area of atrophy. And those lesions are often very stable over long periods of time. And so that's a patient, for example, that wouldn't benefit from monthly or every other month complement inhibition injections. And fundus autofluorescence can help kind of, you know, guide you on that, you know, in terms of identifying patients at highest risk for progression.
Great. You know, Dr. Talcott, in our discussion, we talked about the value of OCTA in some of these populations. Can you talk a little bit about the value and what OCTA might add to our diagnostic criteria for some of these patients with geographic atrophy?
Yeah, I found OCTA to be helpful for a number of my AMD patients who might have a double layer sign, or I'm concerned about might have neovascularization that just hasn't started really leaking yet. So I find it really helpful to get that to make sure that's not going on. I think it'll be really important to think about that as integrating that more into our practice as we initiate treatment. Because as we know, some of these emerging GA treatments increase the risk of conversion to exudation. And so we really sort of want to be have that on our radar, especially if someone has some signs of having any neovascularization before that may be brought out by treatment. So I think it's a nice adjuvant to use for some of our patients as we monitor to make sure that they're not converting to neovascular AMD.
We're going to be discussing now the longitudinal aspects of managing these patients with geographic atrophy. So let's start off with Dr. Gupta. Dr. Gupta, when you look at these patients over time and we look at their data, and we're going to start to have obviously those FDA-approved medications, many in the near future for treating geographic atrophy, what measurements are you going to use for yourself and what may you use for patients for educational purposes?
So I rely heavily on the OCT and the near infrared for identifying patients with geographic atrophy. And as we discussed before, I rely on the fundus autofluorescence to find the patients who are at risk of progression and also to show patients, because it's a nice way for them to easily understand what's going on. As I watch them over time, I tend to watch the OCT qualitatively, not only for the size of the atrophy, but for abnormalities in the junctional zone that suggest that there's going to be some progression, risk factors for progression. And then I do like to use the advanced RP analysis tool. The idea being that there's transmission through the RPE of the OCT signal. So in areas of atrophy, that transmission is increased. And then the sub RPE reflectivity can be analyzed to identify areas of geographic atrophy and also map them over time, both in picture form, as well as measure them and watch both the size and the proximity to the fovea that we can show with patients as well to show how things are changing over time.
Dr. Talcott, you know, you have so many different technologies to pick from. What is going to be the one you're going to help patients understand the value of treatment to retain them for consistency of therapy?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely one of the challenges that we face with the new treatments that we have. I think us as retina specialists are so used to being able to rely on our OCT images to show patients the effect of what they're having. So like reduced fluid or subretinal fluid that's gone. And I think it's hard in GA to really be able to find those metrics to get patients to understand, as well as to sort of help compliance, because I think there's going to be some fatigue with some of these treatments. I mean, I think I really rely on sort of OCT to screen patients, as Manali said, and to make sure that there aren't changes. But I think fundus autofluorescence can be really helpful for these patients, because I think it's just so striking to see the areas of tissue loss in those black areas. But I think it would be really nice for us to be able to have some sort of quantitative metric that we can help to sort of show patients and explain to them as they're on treatment. So I'm wondering if the RP analysis, if I should start integrating that more into my conversations as I sort of start treatment on patients, to be able to sort of look at if tissue loss slowed over time once they initiated treatment. I think that that might be a good metric to sort of show patients the value of the treatment that they're getting.
That's interesting. I historically have not been using like the quantitative component of the RPE analysis, and tend to like, I love to pull up older images and do the comparison, not just the image, you know, kind of from their last visit, because GA, you know, progresses more slowly. But it will be interesting kind of over time with these GA therapies, because the magnitude of the effect widens over time. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of if we can kind of graph the progression or the, you know, the RPE analysis and see like, are we bending the curve for that individual patient and say, hey, you used to be on this trajectory, now you're on this trajectory, and we are indeed making a difference, because that'll actually be kind of proof, you know, positive for that specific patient that therapy is working.
Yeah. And Roger, to add to that, I think obviously we teach our patients about these terminologies, but we have classification schemes now. CAM classification is a new innovation from ARADS. What value do you think this sort of new classification schemes have, especially in the longitudinal aspects of patients' evaluations?
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of I think a lot of that is actually going to be kind of for the nascent or incipient GA, where it's like, okay, you had a little bit of what they call IROA or incomplete RPE and outer retinal atrophy, and geez, now it's progressed to CRORA, and geez, now you've got frank GA. And so kind of and we've actually seen in post hoc analyses from the GA treatment trials that you can actually kind of slow the progression even in this kind of earliest stages. And I think what the CAM classification has done is given us the terminology so we can all kind of be speaking on the same page about the same thing while we're talking about these things, IROA and CRORA. Now, I'll be honest, I don't use those terms with patients, because that's a sure way to kind of get a patient to kind of zone out. So I'll just say like, hey, this is really mild disease, and now we see it getting worse, and now we see it getting worse, and kind of try to put it into kind of more patient-friendly language or terminology. But I think it's really important amongst retina specialists to have a standardized language.
Great. Well, I want to thank you all for your comments. This has been a great discussion on the longitudinal assessment of patients with geographic atrophy. That's a wrap of today's discussion. And keep an eye out for our print piece appearing in the future issue of Retina Today, in which we'll break down this topic and other topics, including cases from each of our practices, even further detail, focusing again on geographic atrophy. I want to thank my colleagues for joining me in this discussion, and I'm Rishi Singh. Thanks for listening.